Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Jake Hirshon. What's up, fellas?
What's up?
What's going on, Nick?
What's going on, Jake?
How's it going, guys? Good to talk to you.
Good to have you on, Jake. Corey, as always, a pleasure to talk to you. A lot of crazy stuff is going on in the NBA right now. Cousins, we talked about him being out for the season. Andre Roberson, Mike Conley, all the drama in the Cavs locker room. John Wall now out. Blake Griffin traded. Kevin Love out. It's just so much to talk about. Trade deadlines in a week. Before we get started, just a reminder, you can listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and now Google Play. But let's get started with James Harden. James Harden was a monster last night. 60 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds. He just was doing everything for the Houston Rockets. What were your thoughts when you watched that game?
You know, I had to rewatch it after it happened today because I was bouncing around in the league last night. So I called like this, you know, when he scored the 60th point and stuff. And then rewatching it today, I mean, obviously, you know, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon weren't there. But, I mean, man, oh, man, James Harden, like, I saw a tweet that compared him to prime Kobe Bryant, which is a little bit over the top. But, you know, right now there is no one else in this league who is even remotely close to him in the MVP race. I mean, it's James Harden. And then it's like the Warriors are obviously the best team. Like, there's a huge gap. That's James Harden right now in the MVP race. Like, there's not even anyone close to him at this point in time.
Yeah, the Kobe comparison was interesting. I saw that coming from, like, a couple different angles. People were also having the conversation of, like, was this game, like, more impressive than Kobe's 81-point game? Because, like, the mass of points that he accounted for was, like, even more. Even though I also saw that I think Harden's, like, total points responsible for in this game was, like, maybe 87, like, with the assists and the points. But he's had two games in his career where he's topped 90, which is unbelievable that he's had games that are better than this one. But I thought that was interesting. Like, definitely the, like, all those assists make it interesting, but there's something special about the 81 points. Like, even though this maybe helped Harden's team more, like, something about getting to 81, like, it's pretty hard to top.
Yeah, it was more of a vintage Kobe moment, but you mentioned all the points accounted for. Matt Moore tweeted something out. All right, James Harden's points from scoring, 60. Points from assists, 26. Points from free throws generated by would-be assists, 7. Total points accounted for, 93. Total Rockets points, 114. James Harden accounted for 81.5% of all points scored by the Houston Rockets last night. I mean, it's crazy to think about. Like you guys mentioned, obviously, the Kobe comparison is still, you know, way too early, and he still has to do a ton in the postseason to even get to that level. But do we feel like James Harden is kind of underappreciated in this league? You know, a lot of people, when you bring up Harden, they always reference, you know, his lack of postseason success. Do you think people should just enjoy his game a little bit more?
I definitely think that you need to enjoy him. I mean, he's unorthodox. I know, Nick, you're a huge James Harden fan, or a big James Harden fan. One of my roommates, a big James Harden fan, you know, he does things that we haven't really seen in the past. Like, his game is different than the average NBA player, like, different than how Kobe's game. You know, it's hard to judge players to players. And for some reason, James Harden is still one of those guys who, like, for example, I saw people still talking crap about him after last night's performance. It's just like, I mean, sometimes, like, just take a step back and just look at what he did. You know, the first double triple-double with 60 points. Like you said, you know, 80-plus points he accounted for. I mean, that is just, you know, we don't see that every day. You know, just enjoy it because, you know, eventually – you know, I mean, obviously somebody else will come up and put up some crazy numbers, but like, this is the now. Like, enjoy this while we have it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I'm a huge, huge Harden fan. Like, I'll go to the death for him. I've thought a lot about why people find him to be so boring. Cause like, I hear that all the time. People are just like, yeah, Harden's amazing, but I just really don't like watching him play. And I actually just realized why people feel that way, like, right before I came on. And I think it's just because James Harden's not really a good highlight player. Like, if you go and watch the highlights of this game where he just scored 60 points and put up 11 assists, it's kind of a snooze fest because it's, like, mostly just him getting fouled and, like, making these amazing passes for sure. But I think really, like, the joy and the, like, mesmerizing part of James Harden's game is the way he controls everything, and like the way he controls the pace of the game, and the way he gets these shots whenever he wants and gets shots for other people whenever he wants. And that doesn't really like shine through in the highlights like the way that it does for like a Russell Westbrook or even for a Stephen Curry. So I get why people don't appreciate him enough, but people should definitely try and appreciate him more.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Jake. Like, there's just not as much of those like thunderous dunks or that super explosion sometimes that will get you in the highlight. And like Corey said, unorthodox player. You know, sometimes when someone's 6'6 and they can score the way Harden can, we're not used to them being such a playmaker and making all their teammates better. So I think that's obviously something. But where do you guys think Harden is in terms of the MVP race? I think Corey said earlier, you know, he's number one clearly, but is it close? Is anybody behind him? Is he number one, number two? What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I think he's definitely back to being number one. I mean, I think people sort of wrote him out of the race when he got hurt because they thought he was going to miss too much time. But he came back really quick. And, you know, he's played 42 games this season. So, you know, Steph, who's right in the MVP race, also has missed a bunch of time. LeBron, I mean, he doesn't play defense. So he sort of only played 50% of the game anyway. Not that Harden's a great defender. But, I mean, I definitely think that Harden sees, like, the narrative back with that game and, like, let people know that he's still the MVP.
Yeah, and I still love, too, how everyone's like, well, it's against the Orlando Magic. Like, really? Are we really going to, like, discredit games because of who they're against? I mean, Kobe scored 81 against the Raptors. I mean, I don't understand, like, why that's ever a discussion. LeBron scored 52 at the Garden against the Knicks. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this, who cares who it was against? A big performance is a big performance. But exactly. I agree. I think James Harden is the MVP. And arguably, right, he could be a two-time MVP at this time if he had won last year. And now, you know, there's no way to discredit how he's doing it.
Yeah, I mean, he was my MVP vote last year. And then this year, I think he's definitely at the top. And this is the type of game where you have where it makes the voters remember. Like, you're not going to forget a 60-point triple-double. Westbrook had that huge triple-double, I believe, against Denver, and he hit that game winner. And I think after he did that last year, that kind of was in voters' mind. So I think this could be that performance for Harden. Obviously, a lot of season left, but this is one we won't forget about. And before we get off James Harden, what do you think a deep postseason run would do for his career? Like, what type of postseason run does he have to have for people to just stop being like, you know, he's not a good player in the playoffs?
You got to get to the conference finals, right? I think personally he's got to get to the conference finals. You know, last year they had the nice first round win over the Thunder, and then we all know what happened against the Spurs. He disappeared late in that series. Manu ruined his confidence probably for the series with that mean block from behind.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, I think the Rockets just weren't ready. You know, I don't think Harden was just ready yet for that kind of stage. And now he's going to have Chris Paul, who also is going to be hungry for the conference finals. And I think, you know, they both reached the conference finals. You know, this would be James Harden's second time getting that far in the playoffs and Chris Paul's first. But I think they definitely get there. And I think that will be the first step to changing the narrative. And I'm still saying that they have the best chance of any team in the league, East or West, to beat the Warriors.
Yeah, I would agree that they need to make it to the conference finals. I also have always felt that the Harden being bad in the playoffs narrative is a little overblown. Like, last year, it was a disaster. Like, don't get me wrong, there's no way around it. Like, he totally just did not show up for game six. But before that, if you go through, like, I don't know. In most series, he was just on a team that wasn't as good as the other team, you know. Like, and yeah. he maybe he didn't do a ton to like get his team over the hill. But I mean, it last year they had a really frustrating loss, but it was to the San Antonio Spurs. Like, this wasn't Dirk losing to the Warriors like as an 8 seed, you know. Like, it was a very different thing. So I think the narrative is a little overblown, but they definitely need to make the conference finals for a lot of reasons this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think conference finals would be huge for him, and then he just needs to be solid in those games. And I think, like Corey said, they have the best chance against Golden State, and if they really compete with them and push them, you know, six or seven games, that'd be awesome. But moving on to some other news, not on the positive side, some big injuries yesterday in the NBA. Kevin Love, John Wall out for 2 months. We'll start with the Wall, with the Kevin Love portion of it. You know, he fractured a finger in his hand. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. I think they said actually 2 months. Surgery is not official. They don't know yet. What does this mean for the Cavs that Love is now out, having a huge season in Cleveland?
I'm really getting tired, though, of the injuries. Can we chill with the injuries first?
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. 2 weeks,
man. We're losing all-stars. I mean, that's all these injuries this last week have been all-stars. It definitely sucks. I'm sure Isaiah Thomas is screaming somewhere. She's probably faking it. but, you know, it sucks. A hand injury, 6 to 8 weeks. You know, they're already kind of – I mean, Channing Frye's about to get a ton of minutes, or maybe they're going to play a lot of Jay Crowder. Either way, there's not a replacement on this Cavs roster for Kevin Love. We can rule out the Cavs trading Kevin Love at least, right? So that's one thing – one rumor we can kill.
Yeah.
It's going to be a rough stretch. LeBron's going to have to do a lot more than he already is trying to do. And the Cavs just continue to look like they're going to be in a bad place for the next 2 months.
Yeah, it's just brutal. I mean, it's just brutal. There's no way around it because the first thing that everybody points to with defense – or, excuse me, with the Cavs is the defense because they've obviously got the worst defense in the league. But the dirty little secret is that they haven't been good on offense either for about a month now. I mean, they're just a team that's in total disrepair. So Kevin Love's been their second-best player, like really their only reliable guy besides LeBron on a night-to-night basis. And he's gone for 2 months, and I mean – I don't know. This is already definitely the worst team LeBron has been on since the first time he was in Cleveland. And for these next 2 months, it's going to be unbearable. I don't know what they're going to do. And, you know, it seemed like they basically had this trade for George Hill, like, in place. Like, they were ready to fire it off. But Channing Frye was a part of that trade, and they can't trade Channing Frye now because they need him to play minutes. Like he's their real only option, like him or Jay Crowder, like you said, Corey. But they really need minutes from Channing Frye. So this is just awful timing, and feel bad for Kevin Love as per usual.
Yeah, it's definitely been a rough 2018 for Kevin Love. What do we think the Cavs are going to do? Are they going to go out and make a trade? Are they going to risk trading that Brooklyn pick? Are they going to only move their pick? What do we think they do on the trade front? Obviously, a limited amount of time with the trade deadline being February 8th.
I mean, I don't know what you can get. Like, I just don't like the. If you look at the Cavs roster, like, what asset besides the Nets pick is even like intriguing at this point? Like, does someone really want Tristan Thompson? Like, I want it. Does someone really want J.R. Smith or Iman Shumpert? I mean, like, none of these players are even like appealing to me. I mean, I guess maybe. I mean, personally, I would try and trade Isaiah Thomas. I would just get rid of what is turning into be a cancer player, which is crazy to think about because the narrative last year was everyone loved Isaiah Thomas. Like, he was, you know, everyone in the league loved him. And now the narrative has completely shifted, and now, you know, we all don't like him. At least we don't like him on Cleveland for sure. But, you know, their moves are limited, and I don't know. Like, I personally try to get DeAndre maybe, but I still don't know if that works. Like, I don't know how long-term-wise does that actually help anything. Because it seems like every day now we're getting closer and closer to LeBron James will be somewhere else next year.
People are looking at, like, the trade market for Cleveland, and they're, like, everyone keeps coming back to this thought that none of these guys who are available are going to fix it. None of them are going to make them be able to beat the Warriors, right? And, like, to me, that kind of goes without saying. Like, they're not one player away from being able to beat the Warriors unless that player was Kevin Durant or Giannis, you know, and like they're not getting that guy. So to me, it's not really about like whether they get a player who's even a great fit or like is going to improve them greatly. They just have to change something. Like, they just can't go into the playoffs with this team for a few different reasons. I have a really firm policy on trading the Nets pick. To me, the fact of the matter is that this team has always been terrible since before LeBron came. They were terrible when LeBron's gone, and they're going to be terrible when LeBron is gone again after next year, you know? Like, it doesn't matter if they have the 8th pick in this year's draft from Brooklyn. Like, they need to just maximize their time with LeBron. And my concern with this team is that, you know, they're going to scrap their way to the finals. They're going to make it. And then say, like, Steph Curry devastates his ankle in game one of the finals. They would still lose. Like, I think the Warriors would still beat them even without Steph. Like, that's how far the gap is right now. So I think if they trade for DeAndre, if they could figure out a different little package for George Hill and get both of those guys, then at least you're a team again. Like, at least you've changed something in the locker room and on the court to try and get this thing functioning again.
Yeah.
Can I say something too? Mm-hmm. One more thing. You mentioned George Hill. Can we also just not pay any attention to when reporters say the deal is on the 1 yard line? Because I read the deal was on the 1 yard line for like Carmelo Anthony to Houston and then George Hill to Cleveland, and there's no, neither one of those deals happened. You know, that term is just so useless to me when I read it now.
You know, yeah, Dwight Howard to Brooklyn happened like four times.
I remember when when someone tweeted out that exact thing, Carmelo to Houston is on the 1 yard line. I responded with a gif of Malcolm Butler intercepting Russell Wilson on the 1 yard line. <of the funeral. laughs> It's like, just because it's in the 1 yard line doesn't mean it's going into the end zone, right? So
yeah, exactly. But back to what you were saying, Jake, I think they need the whole roster makeover. They need a blockbuster trade. And I think maybe that point with the Brooklyn pick, it depends on what they're thinking. Like, if they really think there's somebody in the draft they can get. But the only other concern with Cleveland is, too, is, like, they do get this one really good young player. What other good young players do they really have on the roster?
Exactly.
No, you know what I mean? No, like, they're going to have to do a whole type of roster makeover and trade a lot of guys. So they're just caught in a really tough spot. If we had to put a percentage on it, what percentage do we think they trade the Brooklyn pick?
Because I don't think they're smart, and I think they're going to try to still go all in, I'm going to say it's got to be like 70 to 75% chance they trade that pick.
I would put it around there too, especially speculous rumors came out about Dan Gilbert maybe wanting to sell the team. I mean, yeah. If he's selling the team, then definitely they're going to trade the Brooklyn pick, right? You know, because like another rumor just came out that Dan Gilbert's pretty much running the show around there. So, I mean, if he's planning on bailing anyway, then I would put the chances probably even above that, probably around like 85%. I think it's probably gone.
Trade it back to the Nets. But what are
that's
the
what
chances?
I want to. I'm in on that too.
Dude, I mean, we'd have to throw out some like all of our players, like. But back to the topic. What do we think about the Cavs? Could they not get home court advantage in the Eastern Conference playoffs because of this injury? Like hypothetically, let's say they don't really make any type of splash move. It's just a small move. Could they fall in that underneath the top four seed?
I mean, it's definitely likely. I mean, it's possible. It definitely helps that the Wizards losing John Wall. Not that I ever wish an injury or whatever, but I mean, the injury helps Cleveland's case because that's one less team in the East to kind of worry about at this point in time. I don't see them falling out of home court. I just think even say they fall to like fifth while Kevin Love's out, when he comes back, I can see them going on, you know, because let's be realistic. There's got to be another like classic LeBron James second half team run coming where they're going to win like 15 out of 17 or something. And we're all going to be like, oh, maybe they can do it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they'll be good enough to solidify a top four seed.
So I'm not super confident that they're going to be able to keep home court in the first round. I mean, I would be more confident that they were going to fall out if it wasn't for the John Wall injury. But now you're looking at it and okay, Toronto and Boston definitely going to finish with a better record than Cleveland. That's totally not even a conversation. Then I think Milwaukee's got a really good chance too. I think they're two games back of Cleveland in the loss column. They have won every game since Kidd got fired, and yeah. I really like the way that team is playing. They might get a little better or get a little worse when Jabari comes back on Friday, but we'll see. I'm not really sure of who the fourth team is going to be. Miami hasn't been super impressive lately. They've sort of cooled off, and then if it's not Miami, it's kind of nobody. So the chances are pretty good that they get that four seed, but anything's possible right now. I mean, they are just terrible at the moment. So
yeah, I mean, like, they're due for that LeBron run, but like, so many bad things have happened to this team. Like, maybe that LeBron run doesn't really happen. I don't know. Maybe, but I think a lot depends possibly if they make a trade. I think Love's injury is definitely going to hurt. And like you said, Milwaukee's a team that has played a lot better defense, I feel like, since they fired Kidd. So that could be a good sign for them. But moving on to the Wizards, John Wall, they announced he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks getting knee surgery to quote-unquote clean some stuff up. So obviously we mentioned it. We don't think John Wall looked 100% this season. What does this mean for the Wizards, who are already in a weird situation?
Man, I had a couple tweets about this yesterday. I really don't know what to do if you're Washington. I'm torn because it seems like every year they think they're better than they are. Or, you know, I think they're better than they are too. But they just don't get over the hump. You know, they've got so much money locked up in a bunch of guys between Wall, Beal, Porter Jr., and then crap ass Gortat. And at some point in time, like, something's got to go. Like, I'm at the point right now where I'm even thinking about them trading Porter Jr. Like, trade Otto. Because, like, Kelly Oubre has taken a step forward in his game this year. He's been solid. So maybe you try and trade Porter Jr. to get some kind of compensation, some another young asset, like some money off the books or a draft pick or something. Because right now, like, the core they have, it's just not good enough. Like, they don't have enough bench players. The starters are good between Wall and Beal, but I don't know. There's just something wrong with Washington, and they're just going to continue to be between the 3 and 6 seed in the East if nothing changes. And I don't know why you'd bother. You know, John Wall's going to come back in 2 months. All right, are you really going to make a trade at this deadline to get a big role player just to get ousted in the first or second round again? Like, I just don't see a point of it. It's just, to me, like, wasting time to be mediocre.
Definitely. The only silver lining of this injury for me is now they will almost definitely not trade a first-round pick for a role player at the deadline. They've done that 3 of the last 4 years. They did it with Bojan Bogdanovic last year, and now he's on Pacers playing very, very well for your guys, Corey. I'm glad they're not going to do that this year, but overall, it's just a brutal situation, and it kills me because coming into the year, I thought the Wizards were going to make the finals. I thought it was wide open. They have young guys who are all going to get better. They added some bench pieces, and I think they have enough talent to be a great team. And I think Scott Brooks is an underrated, pretty decent coach. But what it always seems to come back to is that Wall, Beal, and Porter just don't really like each other. Like, that's just what I always hear. You know, it's not like I'm in the locker room or anything, but it doesn't seem like those dudes like each other at all. And it seems like it constantly holds them back. So I would hate to see any of them traded just because I love their basketball fit. And, like, I think they could play a much more modern style of basketball than they play and be really great, especially once the Mahimni contracts and the Gortat contract comes off the books. But I don't know. It's sometimes something that's supposed to work just doesn't work. And it seems like we're sort of in that territory with the Wizards.
Yeah, I think that's, like, you know, on paper it's supposed to work, but I think what you said, the relationships are an issue. And like Corey said, they're in a really bad position right now because there's not a ton of moves they can make. Gortat has been trash. I sent Corey, we mentioned on the other pod, some funny video about that. And, like, I don't know what they're going to do. And it's like, I wish they just let the Nets sign Otto Porter this offseason. Then I wouldn't have to deal with Alan Crabb. But now they can't trade him to the Nets till the offseason. But what do you think they'd get for Otto Porter? What do you think, you know, would be an option with that kind of trade, Corey?
But before I jump into that, I just want to say, too, Scott Brooks, he's got to be on the hot seat, too. Or maybe he's got a little bit more leeway. But, you know, I'm starting to think he's a garbage coach. Like, I just don't see much. Like, he's obviously been gifted with having talented players in Kevin Durant and Westbrook and OKC. And now he has, you know, John Wall and Beal. But, you know, I don't see anything special about Scott Brooks as a head coach.
I think an issue for Washington, though, like, to defend Scott Brooks a little bit, like, their effort at times is, like, so sporadic. Like, you watch Washington, and, like, one half, they might look like a top three team, like we mentioned in the East, like, they could make a deep playoff run. And then against in another quarter, they just look like they don't really care about playing basketball.
Yeah, I mean, last night was a prime example. You know, they beat the Thunder last night. And in a typical trap game, you know, no John Wall, we're thinking, oh, they're all done, and they win the game against OKC, who was obviously red hot. But for Otto Porter Jr., what could you get for him? I mean, you can make the case you can get a top seven pick in a top seven draft pick in the first round of this upcoming draft, like the Nets. I mean, not the Cavs pick, but they're not going to trade for Otto Porter Jr. But I'm saying, like, that Nets pick or worse. You can definitely get some good value because Otto Porter Jr., I mean, at least in my opinion, I like the way he plays. You know, as a third option behind Wall and Beal, you know, he can hit the three. He was top three last year in three-point percentage. He rebounds decently, passes the ball decently. He's an above-average defender, and he's still very young. And like you said, Nick, on, like, for example, you're rebuilding Nets. If they had a guy like Otto Porter Jr. next to D'Lo, that would be really nice. That would be a solid building block. I think a lot of teams, if they wanted to get a young piece, could trade away some of their older veterans. Like I don't know if – let's say Memphis wanted to trade Marcus Gasol for Otto Porter Jr. or something like that, a deal like Tyreek Evans and Marcus Gasol for Otto Porter Jr. or something like that. So you're trading some kind of value, but you could definitely get a veteran or, you know, a high draft pick for Porter Jr. I know I just rambled.
I agree. I think Porter's a fantastic player, and he's sort of in, like, I wouldn't trade him unless I was desperate territory. Like, he's a guy who I'd want to hold on to, especially since he's the youngest of those three. The other problem is Porter's value as a player is massive, but he's on this huge contract, and it's just so hard to trade money right now. Like, it's basically impossible to trade money for less money at the moment. I wouldn't really trade him for Marc Gasol just because Marc Gasol has been awful this season, and it might just because he's not trying, but that's not really a guy who I want to bring into Washington if I'm the GM. But it would have to be something like that where you trade him for another guy on a max contract, and then it's like, where are we going? You know, we're still just capped out, don't really have a good supporting cast. So I don't know. I think every team in the league can use Otto Porter. He's just that type of guy who's a lengthy wing defender and just like drills threes, then can create his own shot a little bit too. But I just don't know where he works money and asset wise.
Yeah, he's a great complementary player, like you said. And one thing, obviously, I did a lot of research on Otto Porter in the offseason. He really has improved a lot each season. You know, like he's constantly working on his game and getting better. So I think that's something you always can appreciate. What do we think about the Wizards in terms of their playoff seeding? Could the Wizards fall out of the playoffs?
No, I don't. It depends how Detroit looks, honestly, getting Blake Griffin. You know, if they hit some kind of stride here and they start to take off, you know, obviously somebody's got to fall out of the playoff picture. And I guess it could be the Wizards, you know, because honestly, Bradley Beal this next 2 months is going to have a hell of a load on his shoulders. He's going to have to play pretty much point guard for them. You know, Tim Frazier, again, another guy the Wizards brought in to be a backup point guard who just hasn't been what they needed. It feels like every year they go after a backup point guard, and every year they get disappointment from the backup point guard position. So it really depends on how well Beal plays. But, yeah, Nick, I think it's definitely possible. I just don't think it's likely.
In regards to Tim Frazier, he's been pretty excruciating. They've basically have just given his role to Tomas Satoransky, who I think is actually really good. I mean, he's a pretty low like production player, but as far as like a guy to come in and run the offense, it is pretty strong. But it's going to be a rough stretch for Washington. I mean, I think you saw it against the Thunder, and I think you're going to see it for maybe the next week. Every one of the teams going to step up because the main guy is down. Like it happens all the time. They're going to get some over the head performances. But after that, you know, like 2 months is a long time. And to not have your starting point guard, to not have your best player, that's really brutal. And I personally don't see a world in which the Wizards finish behind two of Detroit, Indiana, and Philadelphia. I think they're going to be ahead of two of those teams. But it's definitely on the table, and it's a big disappointment.
Yeah, it definitely, especially like you said, the expectations going into the season for Washington were so high. I think it is a possibility, you know, if guys step up. Bradley Beal, like you said, Corey's going to have a ton on his shoulders, but we'll see what happens. Hopefully next time we're doing a pod, we don't have to talk about injuries. But that wraps it up for today. Corey, Jake, great show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And you can always check out The Outlet on iTunes, OTTBasketball.com, Blog Talk Radio, and Google Play.
Peace. Later.